Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Let's take a moment to breathe. Deep inhale. Extend your spine. Remain focused on what you're doing. If safe to do so, exhale slowly, leaning to one side. Inhale back to center. If safe to do so, exhale slowly to the opposite side. Find mental health resources at loveyourmindtoday.org. This message is brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ed Council.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
Hi there, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
We're real life best friends, but we met playing fake life best friends, Turk and JD, on the sitcom Scrubs.
20 years later, we've decided to rewatch the series one episode at a time and put our memories into a podcast you can listen to at home.
We're going
to
get all our special guest friends like Sarah Chalk, John C. McGinley, Neil Flynn, Judy Reyes.
Show creator Bill Lawrence, editors, writers, and even prop masters will tell us about what inspired the series and how we became a family.
You can listen to the podcast Fake Doctors, Real Friends with Zach and Donald on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello one, hello all. You are listening to 100 Words or Less, the podcast. Obviously, you're smart enough for that because you downloaded this thing, and I appreciate that. I'm Ray Harkins, your host. We're talking music of the independent variety, whether it's like punk, hardcore, DIY, indie rock, whatever it is, as long as it has that spirit of not asking permission, doing it yourself, and then figuring it out along the way, because that's what this podcast is. You know, some 7 years in, I'm still figuring stuff out and learning new things. And yeah, it's great. Today's show is awesome because I have Scott Hobart from Giant's Chair. Now, if you are not familiar with Giant's Chair, totally get it. I understand you are not of a certain age, but they loomed large in the sort of early 90s, mid 90s emo indie rock scene. And I got keyed into them via Cave-In. I was aware of their band's name, and I was also aware of the record label they were on, so I checked them out. It didn't really connect to me till I kind of put it in the contextualization of where they sat in the scene, and they actually just released a new record in December of 2019 on Spartan Records. It's called Prefabalon, and it is a really, really good record. It's a great starting point if you've never listened to the band, so you definitely need to check it out from that perspective. And you need to check this interview out because it was great. But let's get some business pleasantries out of the way. Well, it's not even really business pleasantries. I just want to know how you are doing. So please email the show, 100wordspodcast@gmail.com. I always love to interact with people from that capacity. And also, I was able to attend two cool things this weekend. One of them was the iHeart Podcast Awards. And I know this sounds like I'm being like a company shill man because that's the company I work for. And obviously I like podcasts, but it was pretty neat because iHeart Radio, like, they know how to put on an event. And it was really cool to see a celebration of some of the best podcasts around. It was very cute because my 8-year-old son was like, "Daddy, are you winning an award?" And I was like, no, I'm not winning an award. I'm just going to this show because I work for the company and there's some cool stuff going on. So Yeah, some great winners. Like the Best Music Podcast was a previous guest of the show, Jake Brennan from Disgraceland. And there was also just a ton of cool stuff. There was a, I'm trying to think if there's any other, you know, music connections from that perspective, but I don't think there was, but it was a fun time. And then the next night I was able to go to see Poison the Well do their 20th anniversary show, celebrating the opposite of December. And, you know, to be honest, I haven't listened to Poison the Well on a very regular basis in quite some time, but man, the moment they started playing Opposite of December songs, I was just transported back to a time and place, and those songs still hold up. That record still is unbelievable. And there were so many friends, and it was such a positive show. I loved experiencing that, and I hope that you get a chance to see that band perform, because I know that they're doing more shows. Like, that is an absolute reality, because this show sold out in, like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes or something like that. But it was a lot of fun. So yeah, just toss on Opposite of December and you'll be like, oh man, that was really fun. And you can also dive super far back in the archives and you will hear an interview that I did with Chris Hornbrook from Poison the Well, the drummer. So yeah, check that out. But anyways, here is Scott from Giant's Chair. It was a really enlightening conversation because there was stuff that I just did not know about the band, did not know about him. And yeah, I hope you enjoy. So here is the chat. So, you know, I'm 39 years old from Southern California and started to get into, you know, like punk and hardcore and indie rock and stuff and kind of, you know, like whatever, 95, 96. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for a while I kind of resisted the idea of like singing music because, you know, that's what aggressive young teens don't like, you know, they're like, oh right. Yeah,
yes,
I want the heavier stuff or whatever.
Right.
But then, you know, as my eyes opened up with, you know, bands like Texas is the Reason and Christy Front Drive and all that stuff, you know, I took a deep dive mm-hmm. into it, and Caulfield Records was definitely a, you know, entry point for me and had such a good track record as far as everything they've released. And it was interesting when I found Giant's Chair, I immediately enjoyed it and I was taken with it, but it was one of those things where I was like, oh, these guys feel older. And I don't mean that in a pejorative, like, you know, but it just felt, for lack of a better term, and you know, people throw this around all the time, but like more mature, you know?
Yeah.
Have you got that sort of characterization before? Do you see kind of, you know, maybe where, a random, you know, teenager from Southern California would define that?
Well, I feel like actually just kind of recently with this new record, I don't know if it's really to your point, but we just saw somebody had just got the record in the mail, was listening to it, and they were fans of Spartan Records and they had never really heard us before, and they just kind of, but they like to buy all the Spartan stuff, and they got it, and I can't remember word for word what they said, but it was something to the, I feel like it was something that, you know, used the word mature, and like it was more, yeah, there was something in the music for them that seemed to be, you know, older, I guess, to use your word. But as far as back in the day, I mean, I think we felt a little bit older because we were but not by much. I mean, when we were out with Boys Life, they were probably 2 years or so, maybe a little bit more than that, younger than us. And, but at the same time, we felt a little greener than them because they'd already been around. And the same with some of the other, bands around Kansas City that were getting out and around, you know, Season to Risk and Molly Maguire and this Germbox and stuff. They'd already been out doing stuff. And so we kind of always, to some extent, I felt like we were, younger in that respect, but no, not the, you know, I haven't really heard the adjective of mature, or older sounding to any great degree, but a little bit.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I think it's, you know, it's weird too, because like when, you know, your first introduction to whatever genre of music, like that's kind of your, you know, the pole in which you compare stuff to. And so mm-hmm. if things sound a little bit more technical, you're kind of like, oh yeah, like, you know, they are just more skilled players or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes you attribute that to, you know, being a little bit older. And like you said, you know, maybe a year or two older, but like, you know, in those terms, that's like a world of difference.
Sure. Yeah. And I do think that, you know, we have had reviews of that people said that of our peers, you know, some other bands and stuff, that we were, more technically adept, I guess, or, you know, someone said we played circles around some of the other Midwestern FEMA bands, but I'm not sure. We all like it all. And sometimes, you know, you want to hope that you were, not just the technocrats in the room, but.
Yeah, right. You're not just like shredding to impress. Yeah, yeah.
Right. I wish I could shred more. I wish I had more chops. But anyway, that's always nice to hear if people think you do.
Yeah, and also, I'm not sure if this got reflected back on you at any point too. But the like Steve Brodsky from Cave-In, he did a side project called Kid Kilowatt. That was very, very akin to what Giant's Chair was doing, and is still doing from that perspective.
Yeah.
Once I fell in love with that project, and I kind of worship at the altar of Steve Brodsky. So like when he started kind of sprinkling like, oh yeah, Giant's Chair was really important, it kind of like all came full circle to me, where I was like, oh yeah, I see. Like, you know, not only do I,
that's cool.
Yeah. So I don't know if you were aware of that sort of like homage that was being paid to Giant's Chair.
Well, I know, I knew of Steve, and I knew that that Cave-In had covered the Callous, that yeah. song. And of course, I mean, that is just, you know, you can't really hope for more flattering situation than someone taking your song and doing it. You know, that's always huge. And we did get a chance to play with them. They came through. And not that long ago, it was probably 3 years ago now, they were Mutoid Man was coming through. And so they asked if we would want to play. And we were by then writing the songs for the new record. And so it was fun to sit with him stand with him and talk for a little bit about all that. And yeah, that's super cool.
That is very cool. It also is really neat to have, that all kind of cycle back. Where people
right.
are still staying active in music, such as yourself and obviously Steve for that matter, and then being able to, you know, like you said, share the stage and just like, you know, talk to each other as peers, as opposed to like, you know, Steve being a 14-year-old trying to rip off Giant's Chair. You know, like it's right. kind of cool to have that.
Yeah, it is. And man, they slayed too. I mean, it's talk about someone, you know, but I mean, plus they're hilarious, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
but just the technical, you know, that was definitely one of those nights where it's like, wow. Well, and I didn't have lyrics for a lot of the stuff, so I was kind of just scratch vocaling and some things. Sometimes that happens if I forget some things, but this at that stage, we were just glad to be. We just were kind of trying to start playing the songs out and get a feel for, you know, what they would do live. And so, you know, not only did he have words for his songs that were real, he could also play the hell out of them, you know.
Yeah.
And the whole band, you know. So anyway, but yeah, right. You know, we're all to be able to kind of come full circle, you know, and sort of all be the same age ultimately.
Yeah, totally. Cause I mean, to your point earlier, when you are, you know, anywhere between like 16 to 23, if a person is, you know, 2 or 3 years older than you, that is like such a vast difference, even though,
oh, yeah.
you know, yeah, when you're 39 versus 42, it's like, no one cares. Like there's no,
right.
there's no difference.
Exactly. Yes. Yep.
So kind of reflecting on you as a person, you know, I know you were, there's, you know, some biographical information I'm going to skip across just because, you know, that's been reiterated in a bunch of different places, but I understand you were born and raised in kind of rural Missouri. Like how how rural are we talking about? Are we talking about like, you know, like one stoplight town or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. They have a couple of stoplights and actual traffic lights now because, you know, the fast food comes in and then the things get a little yeah. more hectic. But when I was growing up, I mean, we literally had one red flashing stoplight in the center of town. And so it was, I think, you know, we joked there was 4,000 people on a good day in town, you know, generally. So, I mean, it's not the smallest town in southern Missouri, but it was definitely one of the smaller ones.
Yeah. And I think to your point, I think it's one of those things where I think it's good for people to, you know, either be raised from or have an experience of staying in a town that is that tiny, because it not only gives you perspective and something to, you know, compare stuff to, but like my stepfather was raised in a town called Farmington, Illinois, and it was like, to your point, it was like, I mean, I think it was a little bit larger, but you know, me being a suburb boy getting exposed to.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it instead of, you know, this person that maybe, you know, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, you know, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Check the back seat. Check the back seat.
All right, come here.
Check the back seat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the back seat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
You know, rural Illinois life, I was like, oh, yeah, the world is bigger than just my suburb or whatever.
Yeah, the fabric, you know, of it all, the contrast. For me, the contrast between growing up there and, you know, really, you know, I've spent 18 years. I mean, all my formative years were down there. And then at 18 to come up to Kansas City, which is 4 hours away, and just kind of be transplanted and to be transplanted in a very creative environment of a, you know, an art college and a music scene is pretty mind blowing.
Totally.
In a really great way, you know?
Oh boy. I love shows. I love going to shows. I love having experiences at shows, stuff that is like a little bit different than maybe just going to a venue, watching a band play. Go to soundrink.com and they will deliver that in spades. So they have all of these amazing VIP ticket upgrades that you can include on many of the tours that are coming through your city. I have seen stuff like, you know, play Jenga with your favorite band, go grab some coffee. Here's a really cool in-depth acoustic Q&A with the band. I've seen so many of these awesome, awesome options. And what makes it even cooler is that they work hand in hand with band and the management to be able to make sure they're crafting that experience that's, you know, true and authentic to the band. Because you've been to something that a band doesn't want to do, right? Like, you know, like a random autograph signing at like a, you know, a mall store. Like, that's a nightmare. No one really wants to do that. But these experiences are exactly what the band wants to do because they've selected them. So go to soundrink.com. They have this VIP ticket game on lock, and they will make sure that your experience is well worth every penny that you paid for it. So soundrink.com, thank you for supporting the show, and go to some more shows, okay?
You know, at that point you were ready to kind of, you know, be exposed to the, mm-hmm. the world outside of it. Like, did you feel, I mean, obviously because you went to a larger city and, you know, wanted a larger experience, did you have that kind of like, you know, small town, I can't wait to break out of it sort of, you know, vibes going on? Or was it just kind
of, you know,
of,
it's funny. I never really felt that way. I don't know if I just had a fear of not appreciating where I was from, because it was sort of the cliche that, you know, I just want to, you know, shake the dust off and get out there. I'll never come back to this town. And I always just assumed I would miss it when I left. And so I kind of tried to appreciate it as best I could while I was there. And so it wasn't, I mean, I was excited by the adventure of it all and had really no idea what to expect when I got away from there. But I, you know, I went back and was glad to go back the following, you know, after my first year of college to work, you know, mowing lawns or whatever, you know, just to work and go back home for the summer. So I was not in any huge hurry to get away necessarily.
No,
but I'm glad I did. And it was, you know, it's all been good.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Well, I think the comedian Patton Oswalt, like he, you know, made some joke or because he was raised in a small town in Virginia. And mm-hmm. he said the moment that people started talking about working at the local gas station because they get free gas, like,
yeah,
that is, it's like, oh, like, yeah, you have no ambitions beyond just this, you know, 5 mile radius or whatever.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I guess maybe that works on some level for some folks, but I guess I figured I would leave, you know, it would go. So it wasn't like I wasn't planning on staying, but I was not, yeah, trying to run away from home anytime sooner.
Yeah, sure. No, totally get that. And so what was your family structure like, you know, mom and dad in the house, brothers and sisters, what did that look like?
So my mom and dad, for, you know, till I was eight, and then they split up, and my dad was around pretty much. And then, but then he was a shoe repairman. And so by then, you know, it was just getting harder and harder, if you weren't living in a bigger city, to find people who were buying shoes fancy enough to want to get them fixed or something.
Sure.
So he ended up moving up to St. Louis, and so it was just my mom and my sister and I, and that was pretty much the immediate life. I mean, he was around and would come and visit, and we went up there and stayed with him a time or two also, so that was sort of the family vibe. My grandmother and grandpa, my mom's mom and dad lived in Houston, Missouri, which was about 60 miles away. So we would go down to their town, which was maybe like three people larger than our town. And so we would spend time a little farther down in there, you know, spend summers a little bit down there if my mom was going to go to Opryland or something.
Sure.
And then, so that was pretty much the immediate family scene.
Got it. Got it. And you, are you the oldest between you and your sister?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. She was a couple years older. She's passed now, but, we had a, but yeah, that was our just 2 years apart. Uh-huh.
Got it. Got it. What age was she when she passed away? I'm sorry to hear that.
Oh yeah. So she was, she had struggled with addiction, and, it was really about, I guess, 4 years ago or so when it finally got her. And,
yeah,
you know, rough. It was just a kind of a, you know, bad accident type thing that, but it, you know, was drug related. So,
yeah.
And then, yeah, so that's what happened there.
Yeah, no, that's rough. And you,
yeah,
I mean, you can't help but look at the, you know, I guess the boredom that exists in a lot of small towns. And
right.
Obviously, like, you know, mm-hmm. did you, you know, and you, I'm sure, had some of that as well. I mean, like, you know, mm-hmm. was I guess, was that kind of pervasive around your town? Not even like drugs, but just kind of the boredom of like, oh man, like what are we going to do today? I guess ride bikes.
Yeah.
Again?
I mean, I think there was, I think some of that, of course, you know, you can, I felt like, you know, the kids older than me, you know, I was pretty much a straight edge kid for whatever reason. I think my folks had split up because my dad was an alcoholic. And so I kind of had a ingrained sort of paranoia about it. But the older class kids and stuff, I just remember them going to the river to party and stuff. So I suppose that was, you know, part of that. But I think that happens in, you know, any, you know, high school population. They're just, you know, people just trying to find some kind of excitement no matter where you are, and you're going to think you're bored no matter what. So just seeing what's out there. But I do feel like, you know, with the, you know, when I look back, you know, the opioid thing, you know, that has really decimated a lot of things down there, and meth also. I mean, and I do think that, there's just a sort of this, well, you know, there's nothing else really going on, and I'm not aspiring to do anything else, and there's, you know, no opportunity, so why not just obliterate, you know?
Yeah, totally.
I feel like that's a thing for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely, I mean, when you combine all of these elements of like everything you're talking about, like you said, plus the boredom, plus the idea, mm-hmm. that, like, you know, what, like I got brought into this world under these like weird circumstances, and like I'm mm-hmm. in a small town, like how the hell am I going to get out of here? And then you just feel that, you know, that cycle happening over and over.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty rough.
Did you actually were you claiming straight edge? Like, were you aware of that, or that was just kind of,
it was funny. Like I did not really know a lot about I didn't know anything really about punk culture. I was a skateboarder, and I started skating with some guys who were from the college town about 10 miles away, Rolla, Missouri. And they were more into punk culture. And I was in, you know, I would get, you know, skate magazines. And so I kind of started to see that there was a different world and some different, you know, things going on. But I do remember, I never had black X's on my hands, but I do remember for a long while, I was drawing every day. I would draw, a skull and crossbones on my hand, and I don't even know where it came from.
That's so good.
You know, yeah. It was like a vaguely, it was a vague X really, but it was a skull and crossbones for some reason. And it was definitely during my, you know, you guys are just fucking your lives up by partying and I'm just skating.
Yeah.
You know,
wow. I have to say, I mean, I'm still straight edge myself, and I, you know, I definitely like X'd up in high school, like, you know, going to school, but like, I can safely say I have never heard a skull and crossbone X, like vaguely resemble it. Like, that is a beautiful piece of poetry, Scott. I like that.
I don't know. It's just funny. Like, yes, the, coincidence of it all, right? It dogs me.
Totally. No, I love that. I love that. It's just like, you know, accidental straight edge that you were claiming via a skull and crossbone.
Yes.
That's so good. And so, I mean, I find that interesting that, you know, you started, I mean, most people that are of a certain age definitely get, you know, bitten by the skate bug and then, you know, start to get exposed to subculture via that mm-hmm. means, because, you know, that was really, you know, so pervasive within, that time frame. So,
oh yeah,
it sounds like skate culture was basically your sort of like entry point. And who, I guess who kind of introduced that to you, or was that just like, you know, amongst the town kids?
Well, so I remember seeing, Back to the Future, and Michael J. Fox, you know, his skateboard, you know, he was a skater basically, you know, in that movie. And so I was like, oh my gosh, I want that, you know. And then at some point I also saw Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And so that was kind of a surf thing. And, you know, it just was intriguing to me. And I, you know, I was at a moment where you're kind of trying to figure out who you are and trying to recreate yourself. And so, yeah, I think I was, that's probably where I first started seeing that. And then that's when I wanted to get a skateboard for Christmas And I did, and it was all, you know, absolutely obsessive skating then from then on. You know, we built, and in fact, you know, my day job here now, I build sets for a children's theater, and I learned how to do that, those kinds of things, by building skate ramps, you know. You know, learning how to use some power tools and sure. know, how to frame up a strange shape or whatever. So, it's really, yeah, the whole, yeah, skate culture has been a entry into a lot of things for me that I didn't even realize until much later.
No, I love that. Cause I think most of us that get raised in, you know, these weird subcultures, you're like learning skills, but you don't have, it's not like you're saying that as you're doing it. You're not like, oh man, right. I'm really learning some beautiful woodwork here. You're like, no, I just gotta build a skate ramp, dude.
Yeah. I just want to skate.
Yeah. I just got to drop in. I got to have a half pipe, obviously.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, clearly you recognize the music connection, like as you started to probably watch, you know, some rudimentary skate videos or just, you know, see stuff in Thrasher.
Oh yeah.
What was, I guess, kind of the entry point band wise from that perspective?
Well, so around then, you know, Bones Brigade, stuff was happening. And so Agent Orange, I think they were on like the first Bone Brigade video. I think anyway, I know for sure I learned about Agent Orange through, skate culture. So yeah, Agent Orange. And then it's somewhere around there too. This is another thing that intrigues me about my hometown growing up, and it's in skating and all that. It's funny because the town over, the college town, Rolla, you know, I don't know what their population was, but, you know, at least three times our town and probably more when school was in. And they, you know, my skater friends over there, they were constantly having the skate harassment thing happen, you know, the just jocks or whatever. And I never really had that happen. I mean, it was all, you know, our town, you know, we'd be skating around while everybody else was cruising and drinking and whatever. And they would just pull in and see what we were up to and said it was so cool. And, you know, they loved it. And so it was very supportive and ever, you know, it was not a strange friction at all. And then, and some of those guys who would have been considered, you know, jocks, or at least, you know, that was their world, were also going up to St. Louis to see, you know, like punk shows. And they would, you know, and I would hear about these shows that, and the bands they were going to see, and I was just kind of frightened by it all. I was like, oh my gosh, you guys, how could you go up there and just jump into all this craziness? And, but anyway, they would bring back, you know, stories and band names or whatever, you know, and then at some point they were also into the Repo Man soundtrack, movie.
Yep.
And it was huge. I mean, we were, you know, it was like, oh my gosh, you know, all those pro, you know, real punk bands. And so that was huge, I guess. So musically, that all kind of happened around the same time.
Nice.
And
nice.
Very influential.
And how did your, you know, cause it sounded like your mom was the one that was doing most of it, I guess the parenting as far as being, you know, mm-hmm. living with her and stuff, how, you know, as you started to get into this weird stuff that she probably had no context for, how did she react to it?
Oh, she was, so my mom was a hairdresser, and she was like, I don't care, as long as you're not getting into trouble, you know, you can do whatever you want. And so I was having her give me, you know, crazy haircuts and
that's awesome.
Dyeing it, you know, or do what, anything, you know. I was just trying to be nonconformist in any way I could. And she just was all for it. And so she would just do whatever I wanted and let me wear whatever I wanted or anything. And she just figured it was pretty harmless and, you know, just part of the, you know, personal evolution. And so I have to thank her a lot for not, you know, really care. She was just like, well, you're the one who has to wear it, so whatever you want to do.
Totally. Yeah. So
she was very good about that. And, you know, music, I mean, she didn't understand or care really too much about what I was listening to, but she did, I think she did value, you know, culture and so she would take us up to St. Louis, which was the two, you know, that was only two.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, it's Zuko and Kayla from The Wake Up Call. Enjoy your podcast, but when you're done, don't forget about us. We have a radio show. We try to bring a smile to your face every morning.
We also talk to some of the hottest country stars of today, and we like to share some good news with That's What I Like.
Because Lord knows that's hard to find. When you're done podcasting your podcast, listen to us at 92.3 WCOL.
Set your preset on your radio right now, and don't forget you can listen to us online on the iHeartRadio app.
2 hours away from where I grew up, and we would go up there to see, you know, plays, big Broadway plays, or we would go. She took us to see our first concerts. You know, my first big show was Culture Club.
Nice.
in St. Louis. And then she took us to see Rush at least twice, me and my buddies. She just felt like that was worthwhile, I guess.
Yeah, she was supportive. No, that's really cool.
Yeah. And then I was also at the same time into breakdancing. And it was just, I mean, it was a real soup of culture craziness.
In a world where everyone is confined to their homes, society begins its largest bin watch to date. In the hallowed library of Hulu, or perhaps on a shelf of DVDs you haven't looked at in a decade, is a show that perfectly encapsulates life in the early aughts and launched a friendship that would inspire millions. Hi, I'm Zach Braff.
And I'm Donald Faison.
In 2001, we starred in Scrubs, a sitcom that revealed a glimpse of what it was like to survive a medical internship. As Turk and JD, we explored guy love.
Nearly 20 years later, a lot has changed. We're not supermen, but we're still best friends.
Eh.
Given the mandatory lockdown, there's no better time to relive the series that brought us together in the first place. And we're doing it with a podcast.
That's right, people. We're going to bring friends and crew members and fellow cast members and writers. And guess what? We're going to even invite some of you to call into the podcast and ask all the questions you want of the entire Sacred Heart staff.
Join us for Fake Doctors, Real Friends on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Rockabilia.com. Use this code PC100Words and that gets you 15% off your order. The reason I give that to you first and foremost is that so you don't forget it. Once you visit the website, you will be absolutely spending as much money as possible on the rad band merch that they have. This is an independently run company, all officially licensed merch. They ship it out to you fast. They have hundreds and thousands of pieces of merch. I love it. Why don't you go there right now and you'll be able to find some, maybe some gifts for your Valentine's Day sweetheart. Okay. Maybe you can buy them some nice band merch stuff and they'll be like, oh, wow, that's very thoughtful of you. You must have ordered this. And you thought ahead as opposed to running out to the corner store and getting some horrible flowers. You don't need that. But Rockabilia is the real deal. They have high quality band merch, stuff that will last you for years and years to come rather than those horrific fake bootlegs that you see all over the internet. You don't need to do that to yourself, nor do you need to do that to anybody that you purchase it for. So, like I said, use the code PC100, that's the number 100 words, and that gets you 15% off your order. I love them so much. So please go check out the website and you will, you'll buy a lot of stuff. Okay. Now here's the rest of the show.
I mean, I appreciate you mentioning that because I think it's fun to, when you're a kid and you're pretty much devoid of context, like you're just into stuff because you like it. You don't, of course there's the judgment of friends being like, oh dude, that's lame. You're doing this thing or whatever. But you know, for the most part, like you can kind of skate by on some of those things. If you find the appropriate, even if just one of your friends likes breakdancing, you're like, all right, that's cool. Like I got my community. Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that's about what it was. It was me and maybe two other guys who were doing that while, are we going to break dance or skateboard tonight?
Skateboard,
at the supermarket parking lot,
Of course. Yeah. Mm. That's beautiful. Like you mentioned, college was kind of an awakening for you in regards to, getting you more into like independent music and all that sort of stuff. But I guess prior to that, like, did you care about school? Did you have kind of like ambitions for yourself in regards to like, oh, this is a career I'm going to do?
No, not really. I sort of around the seventh grade era, by then I was not a good student. I could always draw and paint. I liked to, I could ace art no matter what, and drafting. I loved drafting and shop class and those things. But and I liked to write. Whenever it came to like diagramming sentences or doing any kind of math, I was a terrible failure. And so then eventually I just kind of hobbled through, but I was in no way academically inclined at that moment. It was more just, well, if I can just, my mom was like, if you can just make it through and graduate, then maybe you'll go off to art school and you could draw all you want and maybe that'll be good.
So got it.
She was kind of on that, she wanted me. Yeah. I mean, she was frustrated by my poor grades. And in fact, at one point I went to a private school, a Christian school, because she was just like, she was in no way religious, maybe agnostic, and it was just like, well, we got to figure out something. So she sent me to a Baptist school in Raleigh, in the big town over. And so that was pretty interesting. And
she just tried to find some structure for you that worked.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went there for, the last half of my seventh grade year and the first half of my eighth grade. And then I got back to my regular school, and that was sort of whenever I really started getting into the skate culture and different stuff like that. But
sure.
I can't remember where I was going with that, but
no. Yeah. You were wrap that up.
Oh, I'm not a good student.
Yeah. You're not a good student. Right. You didn't have the ambitions were just like, yeah, I like putting pen to paper and drawing. And
yeah.
That's kind of
and then started playing guitar too. So that was all I wanted to do. And then, so eventually I did end up going back to college. We'll get to that maybe later, but I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't want to jump ahead too much. I'll let you lead.
No, it's totally good. Yeah, yeah. Because that's where I was headed.
Are you there?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's where I was headed in regards to, you getting exposed to the idea of, actually like playing in a band. Because, I mean, Giant's Chair functionally is your first band, right? Like, did you play anything else prior to that in high school or anything?
We had some different bands, like a cover band. I did have one full original band that had, we probably had five tunes maybe, and we played one show. And then, but other than that, it was really just a variety band. Basically, it was just all of us guys who had by then started playing guitar and drums and stuff. I think there were four of us, and we would just all pick like three songs that we wanted to do. And so it was a real mashup kind of classic rock and college alternative type stuff. And so that's where I probably cut my teeth playing in a band. And in fact, after I came to Kansas City and started playing with Byron, the bass player from Giant's Chair, and we were still playing with some of those guys. We would travel on the weekends because they were available, and I was like, well, we already got a drummer and a guy if we can get there. So we would start, you know, we were still playing with my high school guys at first. But yeah, as far as you know, a band that was doing, you know, trying to write and record and make records was, it was with Byron first, and we had another band called Hollow Rain before Giant's Chair. It was Hollow Rain and then Hot Boy with different, you know, we had different drummers and people, but it was always Byron and I. And then Giant's Chair is when we got together with Paul and Byron's old high school friend. And what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, as you started to kind of like get out there in regards to Giant's Chair and like, you know, play shows and do all that sort of stuff, like clearly, you know, at that time in the, you know, whatever, the getting off of the, you know, mm-hmm. sort of grunge hangover where everybody was, you know, signing bands and independent rock was the new thing. And, mm-hmm. you know, but bands obviously of the sort of indie rock, you know, emo genre, like there's no career path, you know? So I presume that you guys were just basically kind of like putting one foot in front of the other in regards to like, hey, I guess we'll go on tour now. I guess we'll release a record. Like there's no grand plan, right?
I really didn't know that it was more like Byron and Paul. They had grown, they were from Green Bay, and Byron especially, because we were, you know, we met each other the first day of college, and he had a, you know, he had come from this really vibrant punk scene in Green Bay where there were, you know, all ages shows all the time and people making records and selling records and doing their thing. And so I kind of learned about it all from there, and it, you know, it was just like, well, and then some, you know, our friends here in Kansas City who were starting bands at that time, you know, that just seemed, that's just what you do, you know, it's just the, you know, you get together, try to get some songs, try to record, and, you know, try to play out as much as possible and hopefully get out of town. And so, yeah, it just becomes more clear to you what, you know, what the path is, you know, what needs to happen first, because ultimately you just want to be out there rocking, you know? So.
Yeah, that was it. It's like, hey, I could play.
Are you there?
Yep. Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can. I don't know why it keeps cutting out like that, but I guess we haven't lost each other fully yet.
No. Yeah, we're good. But yeah, no, it makes sense because you're just, you know, operating off the idea that like, well, this is a fun thing, we're just gonna follow it till it's logical end, like whatever that may mean.
Right. I think the thing is that we were I always just wanted the romance, I think, and the adventure of getting on the road with a band. I mean, that seemed just the ultimate. It was always, you know, you would just, you know, once you started getting into, you know, what music, and you are idolizing people, you know, rock bands or whatever, I mean, it just is absolutely so romantic and so adventurous that that's what you wanted to, that's what I wanted to do. And I, you know, that was the focus. It wasn't that, man, if I could just get out there on the road, then I could be making a bunch of money or something. It was just, if I could get on the road, I could see mountains and be
see the Pacific Ocean. Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a huge, it's funny because that's such a huge thing for anybody that doesn't live in California or in the mm-hmm. West Coast in general, where it's like, oh yeah, if I can see like the Atlantic and the Pacific with like my band, like that's, oh my God, yeah. I can't even believe that.
Yeah. Yeah. It was just, that was the goal.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, you want to write good songs
of course,
and make good records.
Right.
Too,
right. But, yeah. Know, there's other goals. Yeah. and so something I find interesting too, because this is such a thing of the time, and obviously when bands don't have any sort of like career ambitions, you know, you guys released two full lengths in pretty quick succession, you know,
right?
Like, you know, because whatever, within a year and a half you were releasing mm-hmm. both of those, and you know, whereas bands now like clearly have a calculated path of like, okay, here's an 18 to 24 month album cycle, and you know, those words didn't exist back then.
Yeah.
I presume the fact that you guys put those out so quickly was just the fact that you had all of these songs written and there was a lot of creative energy and juices flowing where you're like, yeah, we got to get it out there, because yeah, our full length, like our first one, like that's, you know, that's old now, like we got to get the new one out.
Yeah, we were just trying to keep writing, and there was definitely more ideas, and we all lived together and we could practice 3 days a week. And I mean, we had it, and I guess I felt like, or we felt like, you know, you just kind of keep producing. And we felt a little like we wanted, you know, once we had got the first record out and toured on it, you know, you do want to just kind of start it over again and as soon as possible. So yeah, we were just just trying to stay prolific, just keep writing, because it was too, you know, you get better as a band, and it just becomes more fun to write because you can kind of do more stuff, and you can you know, whatever you're hearing, you can make real sooner, I think.
Sure. Yeah, you just want to get it out there, because mm-hmm. there's no, you're like, why would you wait on it? Because it's like, well, yeah, we can just, like, you know, tour more, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely wanted to just keep making stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome.
And we didn't know any better.
So right. Yeah.
We don't know. And in fact, right now I'm kind of like, well, this record actually hasn't even, I mean, it drops on Friday for real, and I'm already trying to write new bits because it just seemed like it took so long to get the songs together this time that, you know, and just to kind of get on top of the whole thing, I just want to make sure those wheels keep turning, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah. So, well, especially too, when you're in such a different station in your life, and mm-hmm. like you said, it takes a lot longer to get all these things moving in synchronicity. Right. So it's not like, you know, yeah, it's not like you have an abundance of time to be like, hey, cool.
Yeah.
Let's just like hang out and drink beer and get right. pizza or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. You definitely have to be efficient and thoughtful and strategic, really, you know, which yeah. is fun too. I mean, that's fun to just kind of plan it all out too.
Yeah, exactly. You have a structure to it, and not just mm-hmm. like, you're not just reactionary.
Right. Yep.
Something that I, you know, a thread I wanted to pull on from kind of, you know, previous interviews that you've done. Cause I think this doesn't get, it's kind of an overarching theme, but it doesn't get like spoken about very much, where, mm-hmm. You know, you've mentioned in previously, like the immediacy of this scene is kind of what struck you the most. Like once you started to, you know, really get out there with Giant's Chair and start to, you know, experience all these bands and tour yeah. and all that sort of stuff. You know, talk to me a little bit more about kind of, you know, I understand what you mean by that, but just like, you know, mm-hmm. was it the immediacy in regards to how, you know, quickly you could put out music, or like how you could book shows, or was it like just basically a combination of all of those things?
I feel like it has to do with, I mean, the excitement of, you're just getting closer and closer to the core of where the action is. And you know, yeah, in the sort of most basic sense, it's like, wow, I'm buying a record from the guy who wrote these things, you know, and this is so immediate. That to me is super exciting. And then, you know, just being as face to face as possible, was really, energizing. And so I don't know. I mean, it seems pretty simple. I think I'm not sure I can say much more about how cool it is.
Yeah. I think that's, it is something that is so engaging when you feel, you know, of a certain age, where it's like, you mm-hmm. don't feel like you've got many choices in life because you're told to go to school, go to work or whatever, mm-hmm. do all these things that are, you know, prerequisites of you. But then when you're given this sort of really open playground to be like, oh yeah, like you can create something from nothing. You can yeah. book the show. Like that just feels like you, not even so much from a control perspective, but just the idea that you can work on something that didn't exist before.
Right. Yeah, that is true. And yeah, down to the artwork, you know, that's another thing is for me as a visual person, you know, I derive a huge amount of pleasure from dreaming up what this thing could look like, even, you know, let alone, you know, even just aside from what it sounds like, you know, and flyers and the whole thing. I just love that you know, at this stage, I mean, I definitely appreciate, you know, that when the labels can do all the stuff they can do and help you make things real. But as far as visualizing, you know, whether aurally or visually, a thing that was, like you said, not, there was nothing there before, and it just comes from inside you. Is, you know, it's just magic, you know.
Totally. And too, the fact that you feel like you're part of this secret society, like, you know, your parents and your elders don't have any idea of what this, you know, whatever, they hear you play in a band and you're just like, they don't know what that means.
Right.
And so the fact you can just exist completely, you know, on your own and unencumbered, you know, given some guardrails, but like, yeah, you can just experiment and be as weird as you want.
Yeah. And you might end up, you know, at calling them from a payphone in Los Angeles too. Like, and that, I love that bit too, whenever we did get on the road to be able to, you know, you just felt like you'd really done something. You were out there, you know, just barely scratching by, but you'd made it that far, and to be able to call your mom from the road is always a thrill.
Totally. Yeah. Just to be like, hey, I bet you never thought I'd be here with my dumb band.
Right. But, yeah. That's right, with all this noise.
Totally. Something that always struck me about Giant's Chair too was the, you know, I guess the aesthetic of it. I mean, especially with your first two records, it was just so, I mean, for lack of a better term, just like modern art stuff, where it was like, it was very simple, very plain, but, you know, delivered the, impression that this was something that was very, you know, thoughtful and thought out, as opposed to, you know, maybe other things that were obviously very sort of, you know, hand to mouth, cut and paste. Not like they looked bad, but just, it definitely was a very distinct difference that I noticed between you guys and, you know, your other contemporaries. I presume that was a very deliberate thing on your guys' part.
Yeah, I was working at a print shop, and I could print. And by then, I was also starting to, I was into, well, so one of our roommates was Brady from Hammer Press. And so we had been, from the get-go, pretty involved with, or at least, you know, we had access to that sort of like letterpress and a sensibility of, you know, materials and these things. So we wanted to make something that was special, and that was kind of happening, not just for us here, but, you know, it just seemed like at that moment with independent record labels and stuff, I felt like people were trying to make something extra cool or special or tactile. And for me, as a graphic designer, I was trying to peel back all the layers and just get to the bare essentials of a thing. I didn't want to make stuff that was representational. And in fact, that's in the lyrics too. I think I didn't want, at least the first record, it's pretty obtuse, and I just was kind of, it was a, almost random imagery sometimes. I mean, it was things that I felt somehow attracted to, you know, words, but it was really just kind of putting them together and seeing what shapes they would make almost. Mm-hmm. And so I was, you know, I really loved the idea of paring things down and getting it to this sort of almost mysterious minimalism. That was kind of always a thing, except for the first 7-inch we did, which we were definitely in the old photo moment with, which was fun. And I just loved it from the difference between the Hot Boy 7-inch and the first record. It's sort of eons, you know, even though it was about 2 years maybe or something.
Sure. Yeah. But yeah, so much changes. And especially too, like once you start to add all these other influences into your life and start to, you know, get a broader scope of things, you're like, oh yeah, actually I like that more than I like, you know, just choosing a stock photo out of a, you know, encyclopedia or whatever.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, when you, did you like, I guess, touring in general? You know, I know that there's that sense of adventure, and like you said, the, you know, calling your mom from a payphone in LA or whatever, like there's those moments. Was there any, I guess, kind of, did it wear on you at all? Did you, or did you just kind of enjoy it in general?
Oh my gosh, I enjoy it so much. I mean, it's just still, it's the it's just like dreaming yourself on vacation in a way. I mean, it is a lot of work and you're, you know, you're on a schedule and stuff, but, I can't, you know, it's kind of the adage of, a bad day on the road is better than
a good day at work.
A good day at work, you know?
Right.
But you know, the thing that we were booking tours with, you know, on a phone with an atlas and a mailbox, you know, and it was before email and everything. And, so that was a grind, and that was a little hard because you're just constantly, you know, you literally leave messages every day and hope someone gets back, and you just have to be the most obnoxious person of the 100 that they're getting calls from. And that was kind of, you know, you're just cold selling yourself when no one's heard of you. And that's kind of a drag, but at the same time, when you get, you know, one show comes through for all that work, it's totally worth it. And, you just, you know, you're just a little bit farther down the road. And so I love it. I love the road.
Yeah, no, that's really cool. And, you know, since Giant Chair was such a, you know, quick, you know, what, I mean, the duration of the band was what, like maybe 4 or 5 years, or am I miscarrying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was about, it was four or five. Yeah.
Sure. And so, you know, as things started to, you know, come to kind of I guess, quote unquote, logical end, as far as like, okay, mm-hmm. we've, you know, done all that we can do with this. You obviously still went on to, you know, create music with your, you know, Rex Hobart and all that mm-hmm. sort of stuff. You know, did you have, I guess, a difficulty sort of getting out of Giant's Chair in regards to like, you know, hey, I'm Scott from Giant's Chair. Like people obviously wrap up, and I'm not saying like, you know, you're egotistical, but like, you know,
right,
people,
yeah.
you wrap up, like that's how people know you. So was there any kind of that, I wouldn't even call it identity crisis, but that sort of like transition, you know, was that difficult for you?
It was fun. It wasn't difficult. It was a totally different, you know, a totally different way of approaching music. And it was just fun because, you know, I had a stage name, I had costume, I had all this insulation, so to speak. And it was just very liberating to kind of just say, hey, I'm going to write very straightforward country songs for God's sakes. And, you know, dress up in this old sparkly suit and be a clown, you know, but a sad clown. And it wasn't hard for me. I think I'm sure that anybody who cared, if anybody cared really, they were maybe shocked or jarred by it. But at the same time, it was so absurd that, you know, even our, you know, hardest rockin' friends seemed to appreciate that it was fun. You know, that was part of it. I really wanted to have fun. I was kind of at the moment tired of trying to be a serious rocker. Not that there wasn't a lot of laughter around in and around the band. I mean, we're all a bunch of goofballs, but it was really fun to sort of take it to that next ridiculousness.
Sure. You want to be able to let your hair down and obviously be something completely different than what you previously were.
Yeah. It was really fun.
Yeah.
And still is. I mean, I still do that, you know, once a month at least. It's just kind of like, you know, just going, you know, taking a walk through the country.
Sure. That's cool. And I'm sure it's interesting for you to, you know, get feedback in regards to, you know, these sort of interviews and obviously the press cycle you're doing about the new record. I guess since you've, you know, quote unquote, come back as far as releasing new music and the idea that you're going to be, you know, active and playing shows here and there, what's kind of been, you know, a surprising element that you might not have considered before you started to, you know, put yourself out there and work with Spartan Records and do all that sort of stuff?
Right. Let's see. Well, what's surprising? Well, I guess I was surprised in a way of just the writing process at how fast the music came, the guitar parts and stuff, because before, when we kind of closed closed the doors in 97, it was very literally, you know, that the just the ideas weren't coming. I guess I personally, as a key member, didn't, you know, I just wasn't feeling it. I just didn't have any ideas. I felt like I'd stretched my fingers as far as I could at that moment. And then, so it was interesting to me whenever we decided we were going to start writing this stuff that I guess it didn't really surprise me, because it maybe in a way had been pinned up. You know, I'd done some things, but hadn't really been trying to come up with 10 or 12 new rock riffs. But anyway, that came pretty quick. And I've written about this too, that the words, you know, that was a little hard, more difficult, I felt like, to kind of come back from the very straightforward style of writing, you know, 5 albums of country songs in 20 years. But ultimately I felt like it was, you know, it was a cool process of, you know, sort of the way I used to do things, where I would just basically just drivel on sheet after sheet of paper and then kind of go back through and say, oh, that's kind of an interesting image or idea or thought.
Sure.
So those different things were a little surprising, but then and it was surprising of how long it actually did take, and how many, you know, whenever you can only get together once a week versus 3 times a week, how much longer it can take with stuff. So I guess we figured it would happen, we would be done sooner than it, than 3 years.
But, sure, yeah.
I'm trying to think about just like the whole label thing. I mean, we were surprised that someone wanted to help us, because we've figured all we could really do maybe is come up with some songs and press a record on our own if we could cobble, you know, scrape together enough money. And so it was surprising in a way for us that someone was willing to, you know, help us make that happen.
Yeah, you want to pay to press a record? Are you sure?
Right.
About that?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's right. You know, I mean, we definitely had some moments where I was like, listen, you have to really know. I just want to say this again. We're not going to be on the road really supporting this for months or weeks, even at a time. I mean, we will definitely try to do whatever we can, and we do love to get out and play, but it's just, you know, well, we have to be very realistic before before you decide you really want to get in with this.
Yep.
So that was cool. And it's surprising too. I mean, how many people, you know, remember us at all? You know, we just kind of were, you know, we figured, you know, when you're out there and you know, you do 2 tours and no one really knows who you are at all. 20 years ago, you're playing to your friends in the band and, you know, maybe 5 people or 6 or something sometimes, maybe, you know, occasionally the couple places that would be a big room, but then to think, you know, then this many years later to think that people, that something you did was maybe memorable or people still can get something from those early records is pretty exciting and surprising.
Totally. Yeah. You're like, no one should ostensibly care about what we do anymore.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You're like, there's plenty of other things to occupy your time with. Why are you caring about Giant's Chair?
Right.
Yes. The last thing I want to hit on was, like, you know, so what is your, I guess, quote unquote, real life look like? Like you mentioned, you build stages and props and what have you for children's theater, you know, and so I presume that you have been doing that for quite some time, you know, basically balancing all of the musical projects and then, you know, doing this.
Yeah, it's, I kind of backed into it. I was, not that you ask how I got there.
No, I did. It's fine. I'll take it.
It's funny because my wife was in grad school in Buffalo, and by this time the country band hadn't, we were kind of starting to, you know, get back to real life too. We had done that by then, I think, 3 records and for Bloodshot Records. And we, you know, had toured on all those. And then, we were kind of getting back to real life. My wife and I had moved to Buffalo, New York for her to be in grad school. So we were there for a couple of years, and I was kind of just picking up gig work here and there with, you know, whatever odd jobs or anything. And I had a band up there, and one of the, first we were having a Halloween party, and we lived in this house, and there was an apartment an old dilapidated apartment in the attic that they used to rent out at some point, but because of fire codes, they couldn't do that anymore. And they just had given us the key, my wife and I, to use it for storage or whatever. And we were having a Halloween party. So I decided to do a haunted house up there for this party. And I just got absolutely obsessed with it. And I just decided I wanted to make fake stuff. And, you know, cause I've always been kind of crafty, or, you know, could, like I said, paint or draw or build things, weird things. And so, I got so into that, and I had a friend in a band in one of my country bands in Buffalo who sometimes helped turn theaters around between productions. And so I kind of got my foot in the door that way. And then we ended up, so I did as much of that as I could find. And then we moved out to Santa Fe for a year when she had an internship out there. And I got, you know, I was working at a community theater in Santa Fe for that year. And then we ultimately came back to Kansas City, and I just kind of cold dropped a resume around and had just enough experience to get called by this theater that I've been at for now 12 years. And it's been a really fun ride. And we do a lot of really cool work. It's kind of a edutainment type place. Okay. So we do a lot of, literature based or civil rights things. Not all of it. I mean, like right now we have Charlie Brown Christmas up. So we do some fun stuff too.
That's awesome.
If you call Charlie Brown Christmas fun, some people do, some people don't.
Sure.
We do.
I agree.
He's pretty funny. So anyway, that's how I got in theater, and that's, what my day job is, you know, just kind of, and I maintain the facility some, so I'm kind of a handyman there, so to speak.
Sure. A jack of all trades.
Yep. Jack of all trades, master of none, for sure.
Hey man, well, welcome to everybody that is involved in independent music. You're like,
exactly.
I can't just do one thing. I'll just do a bunch of things. Okay.
It's exactly right. It's so ridiculous.
It is.
But it's fine. It keeps you thinking.
Yeah.
Head scratching.
It totally does. It totally does. Well, Scott, thank you so much for hanging out, dude. This was super fun, and I really appreciate you letting me pick around your life.
Maine, I appreciate it, Ray, and thanks for the good questions and the good conversation.
Boom, there we go. That was Scott. I really appreciate that interview, and I also appreciate his publicist, Mike, for hooking it up. I just always like it when friends are able to make the connection for you, you know? So thank you very much, Mike. Thank you very much, Scott. And next week, we have Ronan Kaufman. He is the vocalist from Zombie Apocalypse, and he also played in a band called Try, Fail, Try. And he also was the host of a very influential podcast to me personally called Issue Oriented. It was a short-lived thing. You know, I mean, he did it for about maybe 2 years, I want to say, and, you know, 40 or 50 episodes. But this was like at the dawn of podcasts as far as, I want to say, gosh, it was like maybe 2000. Maybe 2006, 2007, somewhere around there. But yeah, Ronan is a very good friend, and I hadn't spoken to him in quite some time, so we were able to make this happen. So that's what I got next week. It's a fun one. So until then, please be safe, everybody.
Hey, Miles.
Yes.
It's Jack from work.
Yes, hi.
Did you know that we host a daily news and culture podcast where people can go to get caught up on what is happening?
Are you confused about that? You're talking about the Daily Zeitgeist, the show that we do every
day. I just wanted to make sure you knew, and that everybody knew, that you could listen to us every day, twice a day, talk about what is happening, and they could learn everything without feeling the life drain from their soul.
Yeah, I think at the Daily Zeitgeist, we like to give people a balance of just enough news that they feel informed, and just enough laughs that they're not overwhelmed and can have a decent day after listening.
So guys, listen to the Daily Zeitgeist on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever fine podcasts are given away for free.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at betterhelp.com. That's betterhelp.com.
Check the backseat. Check the backseat.
All right, come here.
Check the backseat.
Gets in your head, right? Good. Because every year, dozens of children are forgotten in the backseat of a car by a parent or caregiver. All never thought it could happen to them. But with changes in routines, distractions, or a sleeping child, it can happen to anyone. Parked cars get hot, fast, and can be deadly. So get it in your head.
Check the backseat.
A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
It's the Breakfast Club, the world's most dangerous morning show.
Hey!
Angela Yee is kind of like the big sister that always pokes you in the forehead.
It's
That's not how it goes?
That's not how anything goes.
Yemi's really like a robot. One of the best DJs ever.
Believe that!
Charlamagne is the wild card.
And I'm about to give somebody the credit they deserve for being stupid.
I know, that's right.
What is wrong with you?
Listen to the Breakfast Club weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on 106.7 The Beat. Columbus is real hip-hop and R&B.